Our final case of the day is Belrose versus Hartford. Ms. Leslie Frazier.
Good morning, gentlepersons of the court. I am Susan Leslie Frazier. It is my honor to be present on behalf of my client, Benjamin Belrose. Mr. Belrose is asking this court to overturn the determination of the Eastern District of Virginia District Court in its dismissal of his action filed by him against the Hartford Life and Accident Insurance Company for termination of his long-term disability benefits. This is a case which perhaps may not loom large in terms of the universal questions of ERISA cases, but of course it is one that is particularly significant and important to Mr. Belrose because of the impact, both financial and otherwise, it has had on his life. One of the essential questions that we have is, was the district court in error by sustaining the contract that the Hartford had with Camber Corporation, who was Mr. Belrose's employer? The court automatically, without very much discussion at all, applied an unreported case by the style of Mirabile versus, Mirabile versus
Life Insurance Company of North America?
Yes, abbreviated as LINA. That is a case that we believe is not apposite for three reasons. One, it was a case that was begun originally in the State Circuit Court of Norfolk. Secondly, there were limitations of actions periods where there was a brief that was to be filed on behalf of Donna Mirabile, which was to be filed by her counsel on April the 10th of 2007, which he actually filed on April the 11th, 2007. The court did not find that that was a particular basis on which to deny, but what the court did focus on was the language. The language in the Mirabile Life Insurance Company of North America's contract differs significantly from the language in our matter. And it is that language which this very court found to be inappropriate to support in the White case. This is the case decided by this court in 2008, White versus Sun Life. And the White case is one which we feel needs to be reinforced by this court as being the appropriate standard in the Fourth Circuit. There is a dichotomy amongst the circuit courts as to whether or not they follow, agree, or disagree with Sun Life. But the significance of the Sun Life case is that it applied a statement which we feel is central to our matter. And that statement is that when one has a contract provision which is impossible to be performed, that provision cannot be upheld by a court. Now, my opposing counsel has quoted at length a number of case circuit decisions which state to the contrary and distinguish without explaining why they did not like the White versus Sun Life decision. White versus Sun Life, we feel, is significant because what it specifically looks at is it looks at the duties of the insurance companies to write plans so that the individual beneficiary of those plans can read them in plain English and understand what they mean.
But does White directly address whether a state's plan, the ERISA plan, or the state statute of limitations period should apply?
Well, the question is, in terms of that, which is the appropriate one? That issue was not raised in the White case. Instead, the court sort of leapfrogged over that and just basically said, there is no question in our mind, the appropriate one to apply is the contract of limitations period. In Maryland, at that time, it was a 3-year limitations of action period for written contracts. One of the essential questions that we have, I think, is to look at the variance amongst our very states in the Fourth Circuit, and then in other circuits which have followed the White case. In the Fourth Circuit, Maryland has a 4 or 5 year limitations of actions period. North Carolina has 3. South Carolina has 3, Virginia has 5, and West Virginia has 10.
But why do you say the state statute of limitation should apply as opposed to the plan?
Because that is what each of the decisions which the White case followed and used as the basis for its determination of what is the appropriate basis is because there is no limitations of actions period specified in ERISA. We have a hole in that statute. And that hole is one that is closed in two different fashions. If you follow the White case says, we will close this by looking at contracts actions. If you follow another line of cases, which are very different from ours, which are best exemplified by the New York cases, those cases say, we don't want to do anything other than recraft the contract language to make it fit. A good description of this could be it's like taking a puzzle piece. In New York, they'll recarve those puzzle pieces. But in Virginia and Maryland and other decisions which have been made by the Fourth Circuit or the district court, federal district courts contained within the Fourth Circuit, we don't agree that puzzle pieces should be recarved. We think that is inappropriate. And if the provision of the term cannot stand on its own, then it must be excised.
And your position is that it defaults to the general statute of limitation, the statute of limitations in Virginia?
For contracts. Yes.
For contracts.
But you're
sort of anticipating my question, because it appears that the general statute of limitations for it isn't clear to me that that would apply even if we got to Virginia law, since we have explained that where there is a more specific provision governing insurance, that should apply, and in Virginia, that's 3 years.
But the issue, of course, is in terms of what the Virginia statutes on insurance themselves say. This issue was not raised in the Mirabile case, and although it is an unreported decision, it is the one, I believe, on which opposing counsel has hung his hat most intently. The Mirabile decision focused on the application of 38.2.314. But the question we must look at is, was that appropriate? That issue was not raised in the petitioner's original brief nor his responsive brief in the Mirabile case, nor did he attack the impossibility issue with regard to the contractual language. And as I said also, that contractual language was very different from what we have in our case.
So that Mirabile case is not published, is it?
That is correct, sir. And
so
of course,
it's not precedent anyway.
It is not precedent, and I don't need to anticipate opposing counsel's argument, but he did spend a large amount of ink in his brief on the Mirabile case, urging this court to accept that rationale. And so I am anticipating that by saying that it is inappropriate, and we know this because when we look at 38.2.316, this is the list of policies that must be pre-filed with the Commissioner of Insurance in Virginia in order to be enforceable at all. That does not include disability benefits. Those are excepted from that list. And so therefore, the Virginia legislature basically has already said, this is not what we want. Now, of course, it can't dictate to the federal courts, but we can look at this from the point of view of what is appropriate. And the best description for the rationale of using the contract period of limitation rather than using any other period of limitation is contained in the Wise case, which comes from the Ninth Circuit.
I still hear you avoiding any real response as to why you won't look to the plan itself.
Because it is impossible to perform.
And that's what I'd like to hear more about.
Because
that is an option in some of these cases.
Yes, it is. And some of the courts have said we are willing to do this, most noticeably the New York line of cases. The problem that we have is the definition in the contract says you can't start earlier than 60 days after proof of loss has been furnished. We know that proof of loss must be furnished within 90 days of the event, unless there has been some sort of issue that renders it impossible to happen, such as being in a coma, things like that. Or 3 years after the time proof of loss is required to be furnished, according to the terms of the policy. And it goes on to specifically state 5 years in Kansas and 6 years in South Carolina. And so at that point in time when Hartford wrote this contract, they already knew that they had to apply the 5-year limitations of actions period by contract in Kansas and the 6 years period of time in South Carolina. In addition to that, as did happen in our case, When you look at the actual dates and timing of what happened, the timing is exactly what was anticipated in the Sun Life White matter. Mr. Belrose was disabled and went out on short-term disability.
But when do you contend is the proof of loss, the period for proof of loss?
The period of the proof of loss is what is defined by the contract.
Would that not be when you're denied?
Well, federal law has come in to fix that problem in the contract so that it now says we must do it this way. But impossibility of performance was not a part of the brief under the Sun Life case. Instead, they didn't look at that question. They looked at the fact that in terms of where her situation was involved, when did it accrue? In that matter, Lena wanted the clock to start as of the very day that she reported her disability to them, regardless as to any administrative appeals. In our case, we actually exceeded the 3 years plus the notice requirement. We did not. Hartford exceeded it because the long-term disability benefits began for Mr. Belrose in the middle part of November of 2002. His denial letter came out October 5th, 2005. Now, on its face, okay, that's not 3 full years, but there is a reflection back period that includes the short-term disability benefits period. That's the impossibility for Ben Belrose. He couldn't possibly have done this and met the 3-year limitations of actions period before he received the denial. And yet their denial came after the relevant date, by which, by their count, the date had started to run. That 365 days times 3 limitation that they wanted started with his short-term disability benefits period.
Could you run it from the date of the denial? Or your exhaustion of your administrative remedies?
Well, the question is because we are dealing with a contract, do we go ahead and apply the federal law that says we're just going to override this provision, and by overriding it, we're going to say that it automatically starts as of the date of denial, which is June the 14th, 2006. And the problem and the issue with this is many states say to their courts, that's just fine. Of course we want you to do that. But where you have a contract provision that by its own language cannot happen, cannot be done, then the essential question is, how are we going to support that impossible contract provision? And the Virginia case law says clearly, we will not. We do not stand for blue penciling, editing, whatever you want to call it, but that process of taking a provision and cutting out some of it and saving the core of it. Virginia's courts have been antipathetical to that. And in addition to that, the various district courts here in Virginia have also said, we have no issue with Virginia's tradition. And the leading case on this is the Pitchford versus Mobile Home. That is the case we feel is the determining one on the question of going into whether or not contracts should be cobbled or puzzle pieced so that they are made to fit.
Thank you, Ms. Leslie Frazier. Mr. Constein? Constein, yes, sir. Pleased to hear from you.
Nice to be here, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Constein. I represent Hartford Life and Accident Insurance Company, and with me at counsel table is my colleague, Laura Windsor. In response to a question from Judge Childs, Ms. Leslie Frazier said the basis for her asking this court to overturn this provision of the contract is that it's impossible to perform. And we are not asking that the court overturn White. We're not asking that the court reconsider White. But this contract is different than White. White involved a contract, a policy, an ERISA plan that started the time period for filing suit, the accrual date, as the filing of proof of claim. This policy, if the court were to look at JA 38, starts the accrual date as proof of loss. And the reason that there's a distinction here is because in this plan, although it does say proof of loss must be sent within 90 days after the start of the period for which we owe payment. It also says we may request proof of loss throughout your disability. And in such cases, we must receive the proof within 30 days of the request. And by her own pleadings, in paragraph 21 of the complaint, Mr. Bellrose asserted that Hartford had requested a proof of loss in October of 2005. Therefore, the proof of loss was due in November of 2005. And therefore, the statute of limitations ran in November of 2008. So the notion that this contract, this policy, this plan was impossible to perform is simply not accurate based on the allegations of the complaint and based on the undisputed language of the policy. In the appendix, we also demonstrate that the claim was denied in November of 2006. So there was still a full 2 years left for, I'm sorry, June of 2006. So there was more than 2 years left for the plaintiff to bring a claim that would be timely under this policy. So whatever the plaintiff, whatever else the plaintiff may say here, she cannot argue that this policy was impossible to perform because it just was not impossible to perform.
Could you address my question at some point about the Virginia, about the applicable Virginia statute of limitations?
I believe that the Judge Duncan, that you're referring to the provision in the Virginia Code that requires the insurance company in a disability or accident and health plan.
8.2.314, which
314,
which deals with insurance.
That is right. That's the 1 year statute.
Okay.
And you had said 3 years.
Then I misspoke.
Okay. 38.2-314 is the 1 year statute of limitations. Okay. Mirabal says that is the most analogous statute of limitations.
What about 38.2-3503? Isn't that 3 years? Accident and sickness, the specific insurance?
That's the provision I thought you were referring to, which says
that. And I was conflating the two, I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine. That is the provision, I believe, that says that all insurance disability programs, accident health programs, must include a provision that says the limitations period is 3 years.
And that was what I was getting.
Yes,
to.
Yes, ma'am. And that's
did default to Virginia, to the Virginia statute of limitations, why would it be the statute of limitations applicable to contracts as opposed to the statute of limitations applicable to insurance?
I think you would look at the statute of limitations applicable to insurance.
What does Virginia law say, if anything, about specific provisions governing over general, or is there any guidance in the Supreme Court case law about that to your knowledge?
This is a matter of federal common law, mm-hmm. because it's ERISA.
Right.
And so okay. ERISA is pretty clear that you look to the most analogous state law.
Yeah. Okay.
And that varies from state to state. The Fourth Circuit has been all over the place on that point. And I believe that the insurance provision, either the one set forth in Mirabal or the one referenced by you, Judge Duncan, would be the pertinent,
the most analogous, okay.
limitations period, and that is the one that was included in the contract.
Right.
I don't believe that there should be any default whatsoever to any statute of limitations, because as a initial matter, the very premise for overturning this statutory or this contractual limitations provision is just not here in this case. And so you don't have to get there, because this is not a contract that is impossible to perform. In addition, almost every ERISA disability plan in the United States has a provision just like this one. Almost every disability plan in the United States is mandated by the General Assemblies and the legislatures in their states to include provisions that say there's a limitations period in 42 out of 50 states, I believe it's 3 years, and then that period runs from the proof of loss. Judge Wilkins, in his dissent in White, said that it was a vast majority of states. He cited the Wetzel case, which is a Ninth Circuit case, which identifies 42 out of 50 states have that provision. No circuit court in the United States and no district court that I am aware of, except for Gillespie, which is cited in the plaintiff's brief, has held that 3-year contractual limitation period to be invalid. And we would ask that the court not accept that invitation to overturn this remedial system that has been created by ERISA that thrives on uniformity, that thrives on certainty, that thrives on efficiency and ease of administration. ERISA is a special creature, and the goals and the purposes behind ERISA are evidenced in Concrete, in Firestone, in MetLife versus Glenn. The principles and the uniqueness of ERISA is enunciated in Supreme Court cases that have been decided since the statute was enacted. And you can see it in the unusual rules that are applied in ERISA cases, where you have an abuse of discretion standard of review, where you have no jury trial, where you have a limited record, where you have the principle that applies that ambiguities in ERISA cases are construed in favor of the insured instead of against the insured. So that's what you have here. White, which has been discussed at length, is a case that is, of course, important, but it is a case that said you cannot have a federal accrual. The federal accrual date is going to be substituted for the proof of loss provision. That's what we're going to do, because that is a matter of federal common law. That's what we've decided to do, and so that's what we're going to do. And so every case that has looked at this issue has decided you substitute that applies the White rule. You substitute the federal accrual rule and you apply it to the contractual limitations period. And that is the law of the land. And if that were to be invalidated, for example, Ms. Leslie Frazier referenced that the statute of limitations in South Carolina that would be applicable if you borrowed one would be 3 years. She also referenced that under this policy, because the South Carolina legislature has mandated it, the proof of loss provision that's in the, I guess the South Carolina legislature has mandated it, I'm not sure, but the contractual limitations period that is applicable in this plan in South Carolina is 6 years. So if you were to throw that out, this is just an example of the uncertainty and the confusion that could arise. If you were to throw that out, then the people in South Carolina who are covered by this plan, who might have, for whatever reason, decided to wait to year 4, 5, or 6 to file their lawsuit, would then be precluded from filing their lawsuit because they would be stuck with the analogous 3-year statute of limitations. And that's just an example of what would happen if the contractual limitations period that have been agreed to in every plan, every disability policy throughout the country are thrown out. There's turmoil, there's tumult, and the lack of uniformity that would exist. We would have a patchwork of limitations, and the whole remedial system and the uniformity that is required by ERISA would be thrown into disarray. I believe that, submit, that the decision by Judge Brinkema was consistent with the law of the Fourth Circuit. It was consistent with the cases that we cited on pages 24 and 25 of our brief, which is not intended to be an exhaustive list. The case of Hartford versus Wilkins, which is cited in our brief, is an Eighth Circuit case that did the same thing as Mirable. Mirable sets forth a roadmap on how to apply White, and it provides clarity and certainty to both plans and plan participants. If the West Virginia statute of 10 years were to apply to ERISA claims, then it leaves plans in a position of having to deal with very stale claims, not being able to plan for the future. It imposes burdens on their accounting and administrative functions. It does exactly what the Supreme Court of the United States says should not be done in the context of ERISA cases. Unless the court has any further questions, I would rely on the briefs and would rely on the decision of Judge Brinkema.
Thank you very much, sir. Ms. Leslie Frazier.
There have been a series of decisions by non-Fourth Circuit cases that have upheld the choice of a contract's limitations of actions period rather than an insurance. The first in alphabetical order is California, which picked a 4-year limitations of actions period. The case is Wetzel versus Ehler Group, 222 Fed 3rd, 643. The second is Illinois, Jenkins versus Local 705 IBT, 713 Fed 2nd, 247. That is a 10-year limitation of action period. Kentucky, Redmond versus Sud Chemie, Incorporated Retirement Plan, 547 Fed 3rd, 531, 2008. Kentucky, oddly enough, has two limitations of actions periods for contracts, a 15 and a 5. And the court chose, in that matter, actions for damages for withholding of real or personal property rather than the pure 15-year limitations of action for contracts underwriting. Michigan chose 6. Laborers Pension Trust Fund versus S. Weinberger Homes, 872 Fed 2nd, 702. Missouri made a huge change in its decisions very recently and applied the 10-year limitations of actions of period under contracts and reversed its precedence. That is the Johnson versus State Mutual Life Assurance Company of America, 942 Fed 2nd, 1260. New York, as I stated previously, is a 6-year limitations of actions period. That is Miles versus New York State Teamsters Conference Pension and Retirement Fund, 698 Fed 2nd, 593. Ohio is a 15-year time period. Mead versus Pension Appeals, 966 Fed 2nd, 190. And last but not least, the state of Washington is 6 years. Wise versus Verizon Communications, 600 Fed 3rd, 1180, and that again is a 6-year period of time. So when you look at those variety of states, we have a whole series of states that leap way past Virginia's 5-year limitations of actions period for contracts. And it is the language in both the Wetzel and Wise cases that I believe are most instructive and we would ask this court to consider. The question is whether or not it is appropriate to use the insurance versus the contract limitations of actions period. Judge Duncan, you stated very clearly that you had a preference or had an inquiry as to the Virginia 3-year limitation of actions period under the insurance statute. The court in Wise specifically stated that they had followed in a case called Nikaido versus Centennial Life Insurance Company, 42 Fed 3rd, 557, decided in 1994, they had applied the insurance theory. They then, in the opportunity of the Wise case in 2010, reconsidered that and reversed Nikaido. And what they stated was that it is not appropriate to use the insurance because all that the insurance statutes do is say you are filing suit to enforce this insurance policy. It is not a contract interpretation limitations of actions period. And the court in Wise was so very, very persuasive in this, we feel, because what they state is it is appropriate to look at what we have as being done or being asked to be done by the petitioner. In our case, Ben Belrose has asked this court to overrule the contract term. We have asked this court to make the determination that the contract term is what is at issue here because of its problems. Opposing counsel used the argument, well, there is extra time provided because we say we can get future proofs of loss. But nowhere in that policy does it say that a future subsequent proof of loss is going to somehow magically wipe out that original three-year limitation of actions period. And this was an issue that was raised in the Wetzel case. It's the same type of thing. What they looked at there was to say, in order to have a second time period, you must have a valid first. And Mr. Belrose's position is, we don't have a valid first in this case because of the way the contract itself is written. Opposing counsel feels very strongly that it is the needs and desires for the insurance companies. But what is he forgetting? He is forgetting that provision in section 1003 of the ERISA statute that says this is to benefit the beneficiaries. It is not just to make life easy for the insurance companies. It is also to make certain that those very people who are supposed to be helped by these provisions are helped by them in a way that is rational, clear, and cogent. And just as in the White case, this court found that the terms of the language were just so confusing and so vague that they needed to be overturned. So we are asking this court to overturn that provision. Opposing counsel has made the statement that so many of these contracts look exactly like the Hartford one. But if you look at the language in the White case, or you look at the language in the Mirabile cases, those languages are totally different. And so again, what we are looking at is we don't care what somebody else's contract says. We care what this one says. And it is our position in terms of what is appropriate here that the language as written by Hartford is inherently confusing, self-contradictory, and impossible to perform. Therefore, the appropriate thing for this court to do is to remove that language. Once you remove that language, once you excise it, because the policy says that this court can do so, there is a provision therein that says this court can do that, then we look at what's next. And it is our respectful position that what is next is the five-year limitation of actions period based on contracts, because what we are asking the court to do is interpret a contract, not apply insurance law.
But in West Virginia, it'd be 10 years.
Yes, sir. And this very court has noted this, as have other jurisdictions, saying because we are a circuit system under the federal rules, we can have different results coming from our different states. And that's part of the beauty of a federal system. It's at the heart and soul of it, states' rights and independent state decisions. We're asking the court to sustain that and Virginia's legislature's choice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel.